You're listening to the Rightstream Radio Network, rejoicing in the flow of creativity. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Rightstream and hashtag Rightstream. Thanks for listening to the Rightstream Radio Network.
Welcome to the Speculative Fiction Cantina with your host, S. Evan Townsend.
And this is the Speculative Fiction Cantina. It's your weekly hypodermic injection of science fiction, fantasy, horror, alternate history, steampunk, cyberpunk, dieselpunk, and things weird and wonderful in the world of books and writers. I am your host. I am S. Evan Townsend. I write science fiction and fantasy novels that cause thrills and rapid page turning. Learn more about me and my 10 novels, and there's 5 fantasy and there's 5 science fiction. Go to my website, sevantownsend.com. That's sevantownsend.com. And it's just my name all squished together as one word. And you can check out my novels. Or you can Google me, S. Evan Townsend, and my website should be the first thing that comes up. If it's not, something's wrong. But the show's not about me. It's about my guest. And today on the show, we are pleased to welcome writer Raquel Burns. If you'd like to speak with our guest, ask a question, or make a comment, please call 347-945-7246. That's 347-945-7246. And here's the part that everyone forgets. You got to press the 1 key on your phone to be put in the queue for going on the air. If you don't press the 1 key on your phone, I don't get the signal that you want to go on the air, so it don't get to go on the air. So that's 347-945-7246, and then press the 1 key on your phone to be put in the queue for going on the air. Finally, if you'd like more information on my guest, it's on my blog at blog.s7townsend.com. That's blog.s7townsend.com, or if you're on my website, you can click the Writer's Thoughts link at the top of the page, and that will take you to my blog. So check that out when you get a chance. There's lots of good information there. So hello, Raquel. How are you today?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for being here. It's great to have you here. Raquel, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I live in Southern California. I have 6 kids. And I've been writing for about 15 years.
Did you say 6 kids?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
They
okay.
range in age from, you know, elementary school to college.
Wow. Wow, that's quite an accomplishment. And you've been writing for 15 years. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've been writing since I was 12, so that's a little more than 15 years. my writing wasn't very good when I was 12, I'm pretty sure. I think my mom still has all that stuff, and I don't want to see it. Raquel, tell us about your book, the Secrets at Crescent Point.
The book Secrets at Crescent Point is from my Gothic romance series, and it's set on an imaginary island called Noble Island that's supposed to be among the islands off the coast of Washington State, so like Orca Island and San Juan Island, and
right.
a bunch of mysterious things happen on the island, and she has to figure out what's going on before something nefarious happens.
Oh. Have you been to the islands, the San Juan Islands?
I have. My brother lived in Seattle, and he would take me on the ferry out to go see the islands and eat bagels and have coffee out there. So I always looked on them fondly.
Oh, yeah. When I was in college, believe it or not, my father rented a sailboat. And I and my brother and he sailed around the San Juan Islands in a sailboat. We almost got ourselves killed because we didn't know what we were doing. But it was fun.
It's pretty precarious out there.
Yeah, we I can't remember the name of the big island. I think that's Orca Island. We went around the west side of it, which is almost ocean. It's, you know, it's straight of Juan de Fuca and all that. And there were these huge waves, and we were out there in this tiny little sailboat going, oh, we made a mistake. But between the islands, it was great because it's all protected and the water's pretty smooth. And boy, that day, I will not forget that day for a long time. Anyway, great. So is Secrets at the at Crescent Point not a genre? It's obviously got a genre, which you've mentioned. That, but is it a part of a series?
Yeah, it was part of a Gothic series that I wrote, and I learned a lot in terms of world building, using the atmosphere, you know, kind of like the dark atmosphere of a Gothic story for the steampunk series that's coming out. So that was a lot of fun to kind of dabble in the strange and the unusual. It was nice.
Yeah, I learned something with that almost every book. Well, every book I write, actually. I usually learn something. Either it's something I have to research for the book and I learned, oh, that's a cool fact, or it's some technique or something I learned about writing. The book I'm working on now, I'm going through and eliminating all adverbs. You know, I usually have a few adverbs, but I decided this time to have none.
Oh, an exercise in strong verbs.
Yes, an exercise in strong verbs. Yeah, in my first draft, I'm going through it the first time after. I had a very something. I can't remember what it was. You know, it was very cold, very hot. I go, ooh, very.
Very.
Yeah, that was a better word than that. Yeah. So you also have a book called The Tremblers. Tell me about that.
Oh, The Tremblers is a steampunk story. It's YA steampunk thriller. It's set in the 1800s of the United States after a massive chain of quakes has fractured North America. And the surviving cities are protected by these gigantic electric grid domes that keep out, you know, all the bad things. So it's a trilogy so far, and the first one is Tremblers, and it follows the debutante that gets kind of sucked into intrigue and danger.
So is Tremblers the first book in the trilogy?
Yeah, Tremblers is the first book in the trilogy. It's coming out on the 19th of this month, and then they're releasing the subsequent books later in the year. It's The Wind Reapers is the second one, and The Chasm Walkers is the third one. And I've written a series of novellas that are actually free that go with the series to kind of introduce the world and give backstory to the characters, so that was a lot of fun to write too.
Cool. And that's, so it's YA steampunk. Why steampunk? What's the appeal of steampunk?
Well, I first got kind of interested in the genre when my oldest was planning her senior formal dance, and they put her in charge of picking the theme, and she picked steampunk. So during the course of kind of going through all of everything with her and researching it, I just fell in love with the lore of it, the kind of innovation and kind of tightened of the universes, and also all the mystery and intrigue that goes along with that kind of genre. There's a lot of adventure, a lot of thriller. There's like monsters. Right. There's fantastic machines. There's, you know, time. You know, I was a huge fan of Jules Verne, and, you know, I loved, you know, the time. I loved all of those. So the more I got into it, the more I realized that I had been reading steampunk and I loved it. I just didn't know that it was called that. So I got into it and I started writing the kind of story that I loved of that genre, and ended up with a trilogy, and it was just such a wild ride.
So the trilogy is all written. You're just waiting to release them, or your publisher to release them.
Right. The publisher, yeah, all three are written, and the publisher came up to me and said, hey, we're thinking of, because the ending of the first two books is kind of a cliffhanger type thing, rather than have people wait a long time for the next book, they asked me to write all of them at once, and then they're just going to release them within this year. And then they asked me to do some free novellas to kind of like introduce, you know, the concept and stuff, because it is a fantastic type of world. Right. And that was fun also. So, yeah, we're all set now. I'm just waiting for the first one on the 19th to come out, and it's exciting.
Cool. The 19th. Mechanica and Mayhem. And that's like a anthology or compilation?
That's actually the name of the novellas. There's going to be 9 eventually in all. And so a compilation of all those novellas is Mechanica and Mayhem, because it incorporates all of the different parts of the world. So eventually there'll be 9 extra. Yeah.
Wow. And where is that? Where can people find that if they want to read that?
If you go on my Twitter at Raquel Burns, and I have a link on there, and you just click over and you can download the free novellas.
Cool. Is it on your website too?
Yeah, you could go on my website. You could go on Twitter. My website is raquelburns.com. So pretty much just type Raquel Burns anywhere, and you'll come up with a website. Hopefully you enjoy them. They're a lot of fun.
Yeah. And Burns is spelled B-Y-R-N-E-S.
Yes, it's Raquel, R-A-Q-U-E-L, Burns, B-Y-R-N-E-S.
Do you have anything else planned in the future? Any upcoming new releases or something you're going to be working on soon?
Yeah, I'm currently fleshing out a Flintlock fantasy, which is really exciting. I just, for some reason, keep winding down all these different fantasy, like, off ramps. And I keep ending up versus, you know, Young, and now it's a Flintlock. But I am in love with kind of like the mechanics of the weapons of the Civil War and, you know, the first Colts and the first, you know, so I was really into those types of weapons. And so I decided to write a Flintlock fantasy because I love also the high fantasy. I love the politics and the maneuvering and the, you know, the lore and the magic system and everything. So just seems to be calling to me this time.
Now in the Civil War, the rifles were percussion cap rifles.
Yeah.
So you have to go back a little farther to get flintlocks, like more to the Revolutionary War. But I was just saying, I've never heard of flintlock fantasy until you said it just now. I didn't know that was such a thing.
Yeah, neither did I. I was, like I said, I was researching the mechanics of weapons during the Civil War, because that's when this Trembler series, the novellas take place in the Civil War in the 10 years leading up to before the quakes destroy North America. And so I was doing a lot of research around that, and I found these books that are centered around, you know, weaponry leading up to that era, and just kind of mysteries and treasures and things that were going on. And I found Flintlock Fantasy. They also call it Gunpowder Fantasy.
I've heard that.
Muskets and Magic, that kind of stuff in it. I chose Flintlock because I like alliterations, but it goes by other things,
too.
It just looks really fun.
Yeah, it sounds fun. My fantasy novels are, I call them Machine Gun and Magic, because they're set in the 20th century, and there's a lot of machine guns involved, you know, AK-47s and things like that. Yeah, and I thought, well, they're not sword and sorcery, they're machine gun and magic. So, yeah. It's,
yeah, but they have the elements, right? They have the elements that you love of fantasy. You just kind of have put it in a different set piece. Yeah.
Exactly.
I have
there's
such a great time.
And, yeah, there's magic and intrigue and world building. And world building wasn't too hard because I just took historical things and added to them. But And I just heard from the other guest on email, and he hopefully will come in a few minutes.
Okay.
I'm running out of questions for you. No.
Well, you know what was funny? Writing this, I had previously written a romantic suspense and then the gothic mystery, and those are very, you know, you concentrate a lot on things like, you know, what they're wearing, and especially in the gothic, you know. And it was really funny because when I was researching the Tremblers and creating things for the Tremblers, I spent the most amount of time on weapon design, which was kind of a different turn and a lot of fun. So I'm looking forward to more of that kind of research.
I which novel is it? Brain cramp. The Gods of Strife. The bad guys are using AK-47s. Because it's the 70s. And I had to research AK-47s more than I ever wanted to. And there's videos on YouTube of AK-47s being fired full automatic. So, I learned what it sounds like and what it looks like.
Uh-huh.
That YouTube is wonderful for that kind of thing. If you want to know what a gun looks like or sounds like, you can probably find it on YouTube.
You can find anything on. I know. Yeah. When I was researching my first series, I went into a gun class because she was a private detective, and it was way different than I had thought it was. I'm glad I did that.
Sorry, I'm dealing with a Zeno. That was a good idea, just to learn about guns and gun safety and the four rules of handling a gun and all that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We still have it. Okay. Sorry. So I noticed from your bio, you're a big fan of Firefly. what was it about that series that you think appeals to so many people?
That killed it for or appealed?
That appealed to so many people. Yeah.
Well, I think it was. The characters themselves were, Mal was one of my favorites, but also, River and, just all of the very distinct, well-layered personalities and how they fit and didn't fit well together. How they were, whenever they would cuss, they would do it like in Chinese, like a form of Chinese. It was like a really neat amalgam of, it was like a really great amalgam of like the Wild West and like this Chinese kind of like aesthetic and in space. It was just something I hadn't seen before. I've loved Josh Whedon for a long time. I was a big Buffy fan. I was a big Angel fan. So, we really loved Firefly. Was so devastated when they didn't, have more than one season, but I love it. I mean, it incorporated so much of what I loved. It had some mysticism. It had tons of adventure. It had, space. It had guns. It had nefarious giant, corporations. So it was a masterpiece. I thought I really loved it.
Yeah, and it was really well written. I loved the way like Val would talk and it was so well written. Things.
Mm-hmm.
So, James, hello.
Hello.
How are you today?
I'm pretty good. You have to excuse me a second. My cat was very intrigued by the telephone.
Okay. That never happens. I lock the door and keep the cat out during the show for that very reason. So, Jim, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm a respiratory therapist. I live just outside of Syracuse, New York. grew up. I've been here all my life. Right now I work in healthcare accreditation. I do accreditation surveys 3 weeks a month, and the rest of the time I try to spend so that my wife and my cat will remember what I look like. Through my work, I've been to all 50 states and Puerto Rico.
Wow.
Yeah, it's been pretty cool. I've been a science fiction fan for as long as I can remember. One of the first movies in a theater I ever went to see was Robinson Crusoe on Mars, which was a wonderful movie back in the mid-60s. If you can get past the early 60s technology of that type of thing, it was a good story. Yeah. And, of course, you grew up with the Saturday morning monster movie matinee, which half the time was with some type of a sci-fi flick, from Earth versus the Flying Saucers to the classics like The Thing and Them and all that stuff. My traveling on the for my work, when I started doing that, I started reading books on Kindle, and I went back to some of the ones that I enjoyed as a kid. And my favorite as a kid, the first ones I read, a friend of mine lent me the E.E. Doc Smith Lensman series books, and I just loved those. And so I started reading those. I read some Edgar Rice Burroughs, the John Carter books, and some of the others. And after a while, I'd read quite a few books, and it just seemed to me that I wasn't reading the story I wanted to read, so I decided to write them. So I wrote a couple of books in called the StarClan series. There's two books in that out, and I'm working on the third one. Those are science fiction space opera type books set in the future. And each book deals with a different hero and basically throughout their whole lifetime and what they do. They're related, and so one is a couple generations after the other. And I'm working on the third book in that series. Another book I wrote is called The Page, and that's about a young knight in 500 AD England who goes looking for the king that raised him as an orphan and runs into dragons and damsels and all that kind of fun. And that was a really nice, fun book to write. And it's my wife's favorite from the ones I've written.
Yeah. Well, Jim, tell us about Stage Fright, because that's a more recent book, right?
Yes. Stage Fright is one. It's about a detective. There's two books in this series, and there's two more I'm working on. The detective's name is John Martin. He's a New York City detective. And he's sort of a guy that if something can go wrong in his life, it will go wrong. And he has this unique sort of gift that when he gets to a crime scene, he can close his eyes back up against a wall and see the crime happening. Sort of a paranormal experience. So we run through that. Stage Fright is the first book in the series. And through this book, he starts out with his one partner and his wife, and his partner is his best friend, and his partner's sister is a big singing star, and they're going after this killer who leaves clues all across New York City. And the clues that he leaves are parts of his victims. So he'll go commit these crimes. In stage fright, he's committing these crimes in front of a captive audience. So he'll captivate people, tie them into the seat, and make them watch as he kills his victim.
Oh, that's gruesome. I talk about the story or the novel Rods. R-O-D-E-S.
Well, Rods is the second book in the John Martin series. And in this one, John and his wife have divorced. His wife is the medical examiner. And the book starts out, he goes out and he gets a call early in the morning. It's not particularly good weather. He goes out and hits the crime scene. And, of course, it has to be his wife, who's the medical examiner, that shows up. And if I tell you much more about it, it's going to just spoil the whole story.
All right. Are these like set in the 50s, or are they set in current times?
No, they're current times. They're current times.
Oh, okay. All right. That makes sense. You also have a book called The Turret?
The Turret is the first book in the StarClan series. The Turret is about a young man who grows up. His father is in the service as a research person. His father is also clan chief of their clan, and his father is killed in a research accident just before he is going into the academy for the Star Service. And the book follows him through his academy days, and he's really torn up about his father dying, and he meets people and how he goes out into his service. And as he finds out on his first assignment, he runs into an alien craft, and it turns out that this is a scout vessel for an invasion. And he has... Well, he has roughly 40 years to figure out how to defend against this invasion. And that goes with the books through that. There's a lot of politics involved through the 40 years, and there's something in the background that seems to be working against him all the time. And that's... quick synopsis of The Turret.
All right, that's great. Well, we're glad you made it here, Jim. We were worried about you. and we'll be back in a few moments with our guests Raquel Burns and James W. McAllister.
You're listening to the Speculative Fiction Cantina on Right Stream Radio.
And now it's time for the Shot of Science, the Jigger of Scientific News. And today's story comes from space.com, and the link to the full story is on my blog at blog.s7townsend.com. A privately funded team may beat NASA to the punch when it comes to looking for life on Saturn's moon. Enceladus. Breakthrough Initiative, a program founded by billionaire tech investor Yuri Milner to hunt for alien life and help explore the cosmos, is considering launching a mission that would fly through a plume of water vapor and other material emanating from Enceladus' south polar region. Milner said on October 9th at the Economist magazine's inaugural Global Space Summit in Seattle. NASA's Saturn orbiting Cassini spacecraft discovered the plume and the 100-odd geysers that created it in 2005. Subsequent observations by the probe revealed that these geysers are blasting stuff of a potentially habitable ocean of salty liquid water that sloshes beneath the 313-mile-wide moon's icy shell. The plume provides a way to sample the ocean without even touching down on the moon. Cassini flew through the plume repeatedly during its epic Saturn mission, which ended with a fiery plunge in September, but the probe was not outfitted with life detection gear. So astrobiologists are clamoring to get back. Milner, who already funds the $100 million intelligent alien hunt Breakthrough Listen, as well as Breakthrough Starshot, a $100 million interstellar flight project, shares their enthusiasm. We formed a sort of little workshop around this idea. Can we design a low-cost, privately funded mission to Enceladus, which can be launched relatively soon and could look for more thoroughly at those plumes and try to see what's going on there at the more than ahead of a more expensive mission that NASA is considering, which might take 10 years to launch, Milner said. How can we, for the first time ever, design and launch, actually, a privately funded interplanetary science mission, Milner asked. That's what we're thinking about. So a private mission to Saturn to look for life. And that's today's shot of science.
This is the Speculative Fiction Cantina on Rightstream Radio.
Raquel, hi, do you have something to read for us today?
Yeah, I have a selection from The Tremblers, the steampunk story we were talking about. So did you want me just... Okay. Just to set it up, it's set in the U.S. In the 1800s after a massive chain of quakes has fissured North America, and the cities are protected by these giant electric grid domes that keep out all the poisonous vapors and the fantastic creatures and whatever that are out in the wastelands. So the main character, Ashton, and Charlotte Blackburn are trying to escape the government's soldiers.
Right.
Okay. I scrambled to keep up with Ashton's long strides, his tailcoat flapped between his legs, encased in dark trousers. The buckles on his boots clinked with each step. Dark brown hair fell nearly to his chin in a manner not unlike gentlemen I'd seen returning from safari, where the wild, blunted edges of society's expectations. He frowned, murmuring to himself. You said monsters? The bloody man flashed in my head, and the hairs on my arm stood. I saw one at Rothfair's place. Yes, he said. You were there? Do you know what it is? I have yet to get a good look. Through the crowd this night is the closest I've been. My father knows about this? I wiped at my wet eyes with shaking hands. Spies and soldiers, secrets and monsters. It was too much. I cannot believe he would keep something like this from me. He assured us he had proof of something heinous afoot in New York. But that was all your father divulged, Ashton said over his shoulder. He was to explain and hand over proof a few days ago, but disappeared instead. Proof. The journal pressed against my chest, encased in the bodice. My father wanted me to find Culloden, the tinker responsible for making his gearwork leg. But how? I had not seen him in years. I thought he was dead. My father refused to talk about him even when his knee jammed and he had to go for weeks without walking until I figured out how to make it work again. He told me Culloden was gone. Assuming his friend died in the quakes, I let it go. Why would they cease speaking if he lived? Still, I did not know Ashton at all, and resolved to keep the journal secret for now. Yes, proof, he glanced at me. I'm sorry, this does not make sense, his dark brows knit. Why is there nothing in the daily bulletins about this? No doubt the censors would scrub any mention of this from the ether. You assume the News Bureau will have some reason to hide this. Why would they? Panic. I don't suppose you notice how efficiently the soldiers dealt with the creature attacking your carriage. That was not the first they'd encountered, I assure you. But in here, there are rumors of strange attacks in the wasteland, but inside the domes. I wonder if the other city-states have reported anything. Not yet. The order has informants at all levels of government, and so far there's been no word except for here. Where are we going? I peered over my shoulder, certain a snarling face would be there, and stumbled on a gouge in the dirt. His arm shot out, slitting my elbow. To safety, I hope. We strode amongst the rusted rails and cars of a decrepit train yard. The dome looked different out here on the edge of the city. Gaps in the grid crackled and hissed as acrid vapor seeped in through the small breaches. The mist stung my nose and made my eyes water. Had the dome always been like this, so penetrable from the outside? Ashton pulled something from his inner pocket. What is that? Opening his glove, he revealed a small mechanized firefly and then wound it as he eyed me silently. It hummed to life, the metal wings twitching against his palm. An iridescent glow flickered alight in its abdomen, flashing in a repeating pattern. He released it, and it sputtered, dipping and swerving in the air with a faint buzz before rising into the night. "Oh, it's a signal, Morse," he nodded. "She should see it and come." "Who? Someone in the order?" I asked. "Not exactly." His gaze slid from mine. "Well then," he said after a few seconds. His gaze lingered on me for a moment longer than was comfortable. "We should be on our way." I said, "I do not plan to be stowed. Do you mean to stand in the dark all night here?" "No, I don't know, actually." I looked around, sure I'd heard another noise beyond the brambles. "Then consider accompanying me to a less dangerous area at the very least." Holding the lantern ahead of us, Ashton reached into the pocket of his vest and withdrew a timepiece on a fob. He stepped over a battered rail tie and turned, offering me his hand. "Miss Francis treads these dark skies this time of night." "I don't..." Ashton moved quickly, covering my mouth and pulling me to his chest when a rustle sounded in the weeds nearby. I stilled in his grasp, his eyes widening as a shuddering moan warbled out of the darkness. The wail sent terror snaking through my chest. What could make such a hideously tortured noise? He let go and extinguished the lantern's flame, his finger going to his lips. I nodded, panting back the panic. I knew that sound. Ashton stepped forward, his hand at the weapon on his hip. He pulled the opera glasses from the pocket of my gown. I adjusted the colored lens down over the eyepiece. Muffling the motor whirs with the material of my dress, I held the glasses to my eyes. In the distance, bathed in violent shades of the filter, the bramble shook with staggering force. A figure lurched within them, tangled in the branches. Fighting the urge to run, I nudged Ashton with my elbow, handing him the glasses when he turned. He took the opera glasses, jaw tight, as he gazed through them. I cowered next to him. Another moan drifted across the night air, a strangled, pain-filled cry. Ashton stepped in front, his arm easing me behind his large frame as he put himself between me and the unseen creature. "Is it one of those things from before, the one that attacked my carriage?" "Quite possibly. What do we do?" "Go the other way," he said, with more calm than I could understand. We veered away and around a passenger car on its side. He handed back the opera glasses. "Your design?" I nodded, struggling for breath. "Maybe we should return to the city." I regarded the desolate landscape. Save for rusting and abandoned railway cars and various overgrown bushes, I did not see a steam carriage or even a horse-drawn taxi. The glow of the Tesla dome shrouding the heavens seemed muted, the sky hazy. There's a reason we're warned not to venture outside the secure zone. "The security soldiers will no doubt continue their search for you, Miss Blackburn. We need to put as much distance as possible between us." "Where would that be? Everyone knows that outside the Tesla domes is nothing but ash and wasteland, and I haven't even a mask. And you said the Union security force is everywhere?" "Not everywhere." "You can't possibly mean..." Ashton made to answer, but turned when a low horn sounded from across the field. A magnificent airship hovered above the treetops, grazing their ragged reach with its dangling ropes. The vast blimp reflected the moonlight across its swollen skin. Ashton relit the wick, then dimmed and brightened the lamp in answer. "We're going up," Ashton said, and grasped my hand, "to Outer City, the realm of outlaws and madmen, a city unprotected by the filter of the Tesla Dome grid." I shook my head, trying to pull from his hand. "That is your idea of a safe place? What would cause a government force sworn to protect to suddenly turn on one of its most wealthy and most well-known citizens?" "I told you I don't know," I cried, voice breaking, "but I can't go up there. My father's down here." "They will not," he shook his head, "they did not hesitate to fire upon you. I cannot keep you safe in New York, and I am sure they will be watching the electro and rail ship ports for your movements." "But there are stories." I stumbled with him toward the lowering lift cage and the craft overhead. It slithered through the dark air on a taut coil of cable. Its glass panels reflected the Tesla dome's faint glow. "They are just stories." Ashton leapt onto the lift and extended his hand. "Truly?" He helped me on board the cage and shut the door. "Well," he said and shrugged, "mostly." Another cry pierced the darkness, and I sensed movement across the yard. Two snarling figures lurched through the weeds towards us. Their jaws snapped on pitiful moans as they grasped at the air. "Hurry!" I held the handle of the door with shaking hands. "They're coming!" Ashton slammed his palm on the ascent button. It yanked us upwards with a jerk just as the first creature crashed into the glass panel. I stumbled backwards into him, hands over my mouth. What was happening? That's it.
Wow.
Hello?
And you even have airships.
No,
yay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I have airship battles. That was fun.
Ooh. And remind me which book that's from.
This is from the Tremblers.
All right. Great. Great. That was great. Thank you for sharing that. Jim.
Thank you.
Yes. That was very nice.
Do you have something to read? It was. Do you have something to read for us today?
Yeah, I'd like to read for you the opening to the book Rods.
Okay.
Okay, here we go then. It always happened in a stinking back alley and in the middle of the night on my watch. Cold, raining, or hot and steamy. These things never happened in sunny, flower-studded meadows. Captain! Captain! Yeah, Kowalski, isn't it? What do you have? Double murders, Captain. The woman's over here. Sergeant Kowalski pointed at the rusting green dumpster and began walking in that direction. I followed him. The stench and steam rose with equal enthusiasm into the cold April night. The mist mingled with Kowalski's breath and then mine when we reached the corner of the alley hidden by the dumpster. Caucasian female, looks about 40. No makeup, clothes are last year's style, no jacket, purse is right there unopened. Stabbed 8 times, 2 in her back, 2 on her face, the rest in her neck. The ME said she's been dead about an hour. I looked at the woman, then up and around the alley. The alley entrance was about 50 yards from us. A street lamp flickered just out of view. The shadow of the medical examiner walking towards us carrying a large bag. From the shape of the shadow, Dr. Lisa Martin drew the short straw tonight. Just my luck. Where's the other one? He's right over here, Captain. My eyes followed Kowalski's gesture. I saw a dark shape against the bricks near the basement hatch. I'd taken 2 steps towards it before the medical examiner's flashlight beam lit it up. I almost puked. Damn, Lisa, next time warn a guy, will you? What did this? Best I can tell, somebody took most of him apart, a mouthful at a time. Not much left but bone. If her voice had been any colder, it'd be snowing. Was that for me or from this scene? Not that I'd blame her either way. I looked back at the body. In places, the flesh was pared down to the bone. There was no skin left, and his eyes were gone. Heck, his face was gone down to the teeth. The blood splattered on the wall and along the ground formed a path back to the woman. Less blood than I would have thought, though. A big kitchen knife lay to the side about halfway between the bodies. What, are you saying somebody ate this guy? I'll need to run some tests to determine an official cause of death, but my first impression is that's what happened. Look at the bones, these scrapes. She didn't look up while she spoke. I don't blame her for that either. I stepped back, pressing myself to the back of the alley. This didn't always work, but sometimes it did. I took a deep breath. I let it out and began scanning the entire area, staring at the street and sweeping back to my feet. I closed my eyes and took another deep breath. I opened my eyes as I let this breath out slowly. She was sobbing as she ran down the street, panicked, terrified, blood running down her neck, thinned by the rain. She nearly fell when she turned into the alley. He was close behind her, his eyes wide, knife held high. He caught up with her at the dumpster. He grabbed her hair, pulled her close. She went limp as he kissed her neck. 5, 10, 20 seconds he held the kiss before he pulled back. Then twice the knife came down into her neck before she turned. He kept stabbing twice more on her arm, twice on her face, twice on her chest. I could feel the evil pouring out of him. It washed over me as I watched the blood pour out of her. He stood panting over her, bent over, hands on his knees. His mouth was covered with her blood. He licked the knife and his lips clean. He stood up tall and smiled, the meager light from the security lamp shining off his pale gray face. Then he jerked back as if he'd been hit. Blood fell from a hole in his forehead. He jerked back again, a second wound bleeding on his neck. He screamed as a third, then a fourth wound drove him back. Another strike, then another, driving him back until he was against the brick wall, sliding down, chunk after chunk of him disappearing. Faster and faster, more and more chunks of him just vanished. Captain! Hey, Captain! John! Lisa's yell broke through the vision. A flash of light reflected from the silver cross on her neck. She was inches away, looking straight into my eyes. The concern I saw there vanished in an instant. Kowalski stood next to her, looking puzzled. He's okay, Sergeant. Would you be a dear and get me 2 more specimen bags from my car, please? Sure, Doc. You sure he's all right? I'm sure. I didn't hear Kowalski's footsteps echo down the alley. I was looking into those gorgeous eyes, just like I'd done 1,000 times before. The stench from the dumpster and the blood wouldn't let me sink into that memory. Damn. You saw it, didn't you? Yes. Well, there was nothing here. John, what do you mean? I was glad she'd seen me like this before. She knew how to guide me back, slowly, gently, quietly, safely. She also knew when I was all the way back. Her arms went to her hips, and the anger grew in those beautiful eyes until I had to look away, just like before. Damn. He chased her to there. I pointed to her body. He kissed her neck for a long time, then he stabbed her. He was angry, hateful, evil. He killed her, and then he stood there panting. I stopped long enough to swallow Harlem. He was licking her blood from the knife when something hit him. A chunk of him was gone. Like you said, as if it was bitten off him, but nothing was there. Then he was hit, bitten, whatever it was, again and again, faster and faster, driving him over to there. I pointed to the murderer's body. John, something had to. There was just a blur, a ripple in the air, like hot air rising off asphalt. Nothing else, Lisa. Saying her name brought a lump up, two lumps. Lisa, I don't. Cold, ice, damn. She'd turned back to the woman's body already. Kowalski's steps echoed closer. Yeah, this was going to be a long day. And that's that.
Well, that is very gritty, very descriptive. And quite good, yes.
Well, thank you.
Yes, very.
You know, that's good for my ego, so I'll encourage as much of that as possible.
Okay, well, I'm done. Rachel, you told me before the show started, you started writing 15 years ago. Why did you start writing 15 years ago?
I started writing in earnest as with an eye towards publication around 15 years ago. I always wrote, as a kid, I often would get in trouble in school for writing instead of taking notes like I was supposed to.
Yep.
And of course, was just always with my nose in a book. So about 15 years ago, I had been writing stories, and I ended up writing a three-book series. It was more like along the lines of 24, like an espionage thriller. And my husband really liked it, and he's like, you know, you should do this, you know, get it published. And so I just started on the journey of, you know, like finding an agent and going to conferences and, you know, the whole thing. So, but yeah, for about 15 years professionally, I've been writing.
Oh, all right. That's good. Jim, you have a book called The Universe While You Wait.
That's a collection of short stories that I wrote originally when I first started writing. As I was traveling around, I'd have time in hotel rooms. So I used it as an exercise. How can I tell a story in just a page or two?
Mm-hmm.
And I put those together into that as about 17 short stories in that book.
Wow. So these are pretty short stories.
Most of them are very short, yes. And I've written another book of short stories called The Universe While You Wait, and that has a couple more, plus one of them that's a longer story I wrote for an anthology that was called Torched, that was on Amazon for a while, but I don't think you can find it anymore. It was a lot of short stories with a fire-based theme in it, and I had a lot of fun with that. Yeah, I took all my characters' names from 20s, 30s, and 40s comedy movies. So you've got Captain Spaulding and Mrs. Rittenhouse and all those type of folks in there.
That's so funny.
Well, it's not a comedy story. It's a pretty much a straight sci-fi story in a 50s sort of way to tell it, but I just had a lot of fun using the names that way.
All right. Yeah, coming up with names is one of my least favorite parts of writing. I found a couple of random name generators online that I use. I'll flick through the randomness until I find one I like. I used to open up the phone book and point at a random spot just to come up with a name. I hate coming up with names. All right.
I watch a TV show where these guys, they often masquerade as FBI agents or cops or whatever, and they always choose the last names of famous rock stars.
It reminded me of something, but I can't remember where. Anyway, Raquel, why should anybody buy your books?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
I said, why should anybody buy your books?
Oh, well, it's a great ride. It's a lot of fun. Lots of adventure and thrills and a puzzle to unravel. It's a fun ride. If you like books that are quick reads and kind of at a breathless pace, then you would definitely like the kinds of books that I write.
All right. Great. Jim, same question. Why should anybody buy your books?
Well, obviously to make me rich, but that isn't quite working out the way I thought. But really, if you like reading the books from Doc Smith or Robert Heinlein, those types of 50s, 60s, 70s science fiction, then those are the folks that would like my books.
All right. That's great. I read the Lens series. I've read everything I could get my hands on by Heinlein. If they published his laundry list, I would probably read it. Raquel, what motivates and inspires you?
To write? I can't help it. I don't think that it's the kind of endeavor that you would undertake if you wanted to be famous or get rich, because that's not really going to drive you through hours and hours of editing and writing. Yeah. But I think just having these worlds in your head and these stories to tell, I can't not write.
Can't not write. That's sort of my situation. Jim, what motivates and inspires you?
Well, it's the stories that I want to read about or watch in a movie and no one makes. So I've got to get those stories out. So I write those and just have a lot of fun doing it. It's a creative expression, really.
Yeah. I can't remember who said it, but the quote is, if you can't find the book you want to read, write it.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Yep. I want to say Maya Angelou, but I may be out of my mind. I hate to attribute that. All right. Raquel, we're almost to the end of the show. Anything you want to add? Anything you want to say? Anything I forgot to ask about?
No, just, if you're kind of on the fence or you're interested in learning about steampunk and that kind of writing, there's some free novellas, so you can pick them up with no risk. And just go to RaquelBurns.com.
RaquelBurns.com, great. Jim, same thing. Anything you want to say? Anything I forgot to ask you about? Anything you're dying to get out before the end of the show?
No, I think we've covered a lot of it. And you can just follow the links on your website to my Amazon page and take a look at the different books that are there. And get some more out there.
Take one and
get one of the short story books and read them. And if you like them, buy some more and tell other people about them.
Yeah. Always, if you like a book, tell other people. Any book, especially Raquel, Jim, or my books. If you like them, tell other people.
Here, here.
Yeah. I'd like to thank my guests, Raquel Burns and James W. McAllister. Again, As Jim mentioned, there's more information on these writers on my blog at blog.s7townsend.com. There's links to their websites, links to their social media, links to their books. Not all their books, but, you know, some of them. So go check that out at blog.s7townsend.com. And tune in next week when our scheduled guests are Joshua Chad and Nancy Fulton. Looking forward to that. Thank you, Raquel.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, it was great having you here. And thank you, Jim. Sorry about the confusion.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yeah. And thank you to all our listeners. Everybody have a great weekend, and we'll see you next week.
This has been the Speculative Fiction Cantina on Rightstream Radio.